my thesis through this whole podcast is going to be that what really makes Red Garland special is his incredible artistry as a jazz musician and his ability to put his own ego aside for the sake of art, of the creation of beauty, even though there were difficulties.
Welcome to Jazz Therapy, where we explore the intersectionality of jazz, the psyche and psychoanalytic thought, spirituality, and consciousness. We have in-depth conversations with people from various walks of life, all of whom view their work as a service to humanity. Then we listen to jazz and discuss our thoughts, feelings, and reflections, which arise from hearing this incredible art form. I'm your host, Jesse Shapiro. This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. If you or someone you know is feeling suicidal or in an emotional crisis, you can call or text the SAMHSA Crisis Line, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Association, through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Simply call or dial 988 24/7, 365 days a year. You can find his podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Put your own ego aside and play as a team. Sonny Bono. When the ego dies, the soul awakens. Mahatma Gandhi, who liberated a whole nation with the force of divine love. Make your ego porous. Will is of little importance. Complaining is nothing, and fame is nothing. Openness, patience, receptivity, solitude is everything. Rainer Maria Rilke. The biggest ego trip is getting rid of your ego. And of course, the joke of all of it is that your ego does not exist. Welcome everyone to Jazz Therapy. Here are some opening quotes to set the tone for today's episode, which is about Red Garland groups and how we function in groups, looking at specifically through the lens of Red Garland and his work mainly with the Miles Davis Quintet. And we will end with some groups in this world who need some positive energy. We will do a meditation. And we will send healing and positive energy to Congress in the United States and to parliaments all around the world. All right, so you're probably wondering, how am I going to tie these themes together? So I'm really excited for today. Let's get into this and just really do a deep dive on Red Garland. I wanted to celebrate the work of American jazz pianist Red Garland because I really adore his work. He has a birthday anniversary in May, and his sound is just so beautiful. And I'm also going to argue my thesis of this podcast, if you will, is that one of the reasons that he was such a great artist is that he was able to put his ego aside when he played in groups, when he played in the first great Miles Davis Quintet, and later on when he played with John Coltrane and in his own quintet. And this is a lesson that we can all learn from. I need to learn from it, setting my own ego aside. I'll talk about that a little bit later. So this is going to kind of be about honoring the legacy and paying homage to Red Garland and the beauty that he created, taking what we can from the life lessons that he shows us here that I'll talk about today, thinking a little bit about applying the psychological principles of group functioning and group therapy to maybe some of the dynamics that were going on between the artists in the first great Miles Davis Quintet. Since I am a psychotherapist and I do want to apply a psychological lens, and we're going to take it a step further by really getting to the spiritual, which is putting our own ego aside for growth, for creation, for the greater good. So that's kind of where we're going. Hang with me. This should be a really fun ride for today. All right. So I'm going to read this quote. This is from the Sony and Columbia website. Red Garland is known as a blues bass player for his encyclopedic knowledge of melodies and, quote, locked hands, quote, technique, a key member of Miles Davis's first great quintet in the mid-1950s. Red Garland played with Miles from 1955 to 1958. It's the end of the quote. And for me, I would describe Red Garland as a pianist who could really swing, and he also could bring an almost ethereal, rhapsodic quality to the ballads that he played. Like, I just cry almost every time I hear some of his ballads because they are just so exquisite. There's just this light, this ethereal, deeply, I don't know, heaven-sent touch. Let's talk a little bit about the life of Red Garland, and then we will get on to looking at his function in the group and a little bit about the Miles Davis Quintet that he was a part of. Okay, so drummer Charlie Persip played with Red Garland on a couple of albums, and he was interviewed for Artist of Jazz, Mr. Charlie Persip on Red Garland and Miles Davis. And this is a short clip. It's available on YouTube. It's about 2 minutes. There's so many gems on YouTube, you guys. So this is a quote from him. He said, "Red had a style of playing that was very, you know, Red could really swing, man, you know, and everything he played made sense. He never got into being too weird." So he's talking about Red Garland's sense of swing, which is just really like the ability to make a piece alive. Just feel like you're dancing inside of your body, just hearing the music. And he's saying he didn't get into more kind of hard bop jazz that was free jazz that came later. This is earlier in the historical context of jazz. And Mr. Persip credited playing with Red in helping him really grow in his ability to swing. And in this clip, he talks about how Miles Davis came up to him after, you know, some time playing with Red. And he said, "You finally learned how to swing, mother effer." You guys have to watch the clip. It's really funny. I can't say the whole word on here. However, he's really saying that Red Garland helped him in his own ability to make a piece come alive, to really put his own je ne sais quoi into the music. Red Garland was born William McKinley Garland Jr. on May 13th, 1923. He died April 23rd, 1984. Was given the nickname Red somewhere along the way. And he was known as a band leader, and during the 1950s, rose to prominence for his work with the Miles Davis Quintet. Really helped to popularize the block chord style of playing in jazz piano. He was born in Dallas, Texas in 1923. And this is from Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia. He began his musical studies on the clarinet and alto saxophone, and he studied with Buster Prof Smith, who was also a mentor in Kansas City to Charlie Parker, who played the alto saxophone. Now, Red Garland joined the United States Army in 1941, and he was stationed in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And it was in the piano that he began to learn playing piano with Army pianists Lee Barnes and John Lewis. And at this time, another interesting fun fact about him, he was also an amateur boxer, and at one point fought Sugar Ray Robinson, and he lost the match. And evidently he was a lightweight in the boxing category. Now, this is just an interesting correlation that he was an athlete, and I could see that he took very easily to the piano, having a very high degree of bodily kinesthetic intelligence. To be a boxer, one's reaction times have to be otherworldly, and this was obviously a skill that transferred to the piano because Red Garland's piano playing was otherworldly. This is just interesting. So after being discharged from the military in 1944, we continue from Wikipedia. Red Garland played locally around Texas until 1946, when he was a member of the Hot Lips Pages band. And he played on a tour until this ended in New York. He started to stay in New York and found work there, and then also in Philadelphia. When he was in New York, the singer Billy Eckstine heard about him and hired Red Garland for several weeks. And he subsequently worked with many of the top jazz musicians, including Charlie Parker, Ben Webster, Billy Eckstine Big Band, Coleman Hawkins, Sonny Stitt. And then he met Miles in Baltimore in 1955. So when he met Miles Davis and joined the Miles Davis Quintet in 1955, this is really what made him famous. So I'm just going to read a quote about this quintet. This is Miles Davis Quintet. These are some of my favorite recordings in jazz. They're absolutely incredible. I have so many favorites. And this is a quote from jazz journalist Ralph Gleason. And this is from milesdavis.com. This is a cool website. You guys can look at it. And Ralph Gleason says, "The intricacy of the linkage between the minds of these musicians has never been equaled in any group, in my opinion." And this is of the Miles Davis Quintet. So how did this quintet form? Now, I did some research, and this is from the Concord Record Label website. And here is a quote from Red Garland on how he became acquainted with Miles. So he says, "Miles and I were in Boston playing separate gigs. One night we were talking and Miles said, 'I want to form a band.' Philly Joe Jones would be the drummer. That was obvious. But Miles wanted Sonny Rollins and Sonny couldn't make it. So I told Miles about this tenor player from Philly, John Coltrane. And he, Miles, said, 'Tell Coltrane to meet us in Baltimore for the gig.' And Miles brought Paul Chambers, who was just a 20-year-old kid working in Detroit." Okay, so Red Garland introduced John Coltrane to Miles Davis. That is really cool. And another thing I also read was, as I mentioned before, Red Garland was an unranked lightweight boxer, and he had boxed in over 35 fights. And evidently, this is one of the reasons why Miles took a liking to him. Miles was a fan of boxing, and so this was a point of them being simpatico together, that they had this shared interest in boxing. And the members of the quintet were John Coltrane on the tenor sax, Red Garland on the piano, Miles Davis on the trumpet, Billy Joe Jones on the drums, and Paul Chambers on the bass. So Miles did not have them rehearse. They came together and they played in Baltimore. And according to Philly Joe Jones, this is also again from the Concord Record Label website, Miles evidently liked to have John Coltrane start off with a long tenor solo and then the band would be swinging. Here's Red Garland again. He says, "After 1 week in Baltimore, it seemed we had played together about 5 years." So there was something about all five of them coming together. They really just musically hit it out of the park. They were at the right place at the right time. They just had this magic.
If you'd like to know more, you can visit my website at www.jazztherapy.com. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in the states of California and New York. You can also check out my profile page on Psychology Today, which I'll leave linked below.
So here's another quote from journalist Ralph Gleason about the quintet, because they did do gigs in clubs so that by the time they got to the studio to record their work together, they had had experience, you know, in different clubs, traveling, getting the standards to sound the way that they eventually did. So Mr. Gleason said, "I heard this band many nights at the Black Hawk in San Francisco, for which I am grateful. They wailed, and they didn't need to warm up. The sheer intensity of it was thrilling. Fast or slow, they made every bar sound like it had been born in an atom-splitting burst of energy." My kingdom to have been at the Black Hawk and seen these five live. Red Garland's style in these recordings is evident in his distinctive chord voicings. his sophisticated accompaniment and his musical references to Ahmad Jamal's style. And evidently, Miles really liked his style. He encouraged Red Garland to absorb some of Ahmad Jamal's lightness of touch and harmonies with his own approach. And this is from the Sony website again. And we'll talk about Ahmad Jamal in another episode because he is just absolutely incredible as well. So Red Garland, he played on the first of Miles Davis's many Columbia recordings after he recorded Workin' Cookin', Steamin' and Rollin', the four recordings that make up the original Miles Davis quintet. Garland played on Roundabout Midnight. And at this point, you guys, the relationship between Miles Davis and Red Garland was beginning to deteriorate. They had a strained relationship. However, Red Garland continued to play. I did learn, though, by 1958, this is a quote from, I believe, Wikipedia, Garland and Jones had started to become more erratic in turning up for recordings and shows. Red Garland was eventually fired by Miles, but later returned to play on another jazz classic, Milestones. So there was tension, and we're going to sort of talk about that and get into that. And again, my thesis through this whole podcast is going to be that what really makes Red Garland special is his incredible artistry as a jazz musician and his ability to put his own ego aside for the sake of art, of the creation of beauty, even though there were difficulties. So we're going to sort of talk about this. And just finishing the arc of Red Garland's life. So Red Garland did become very famous and well-known after the recordings of the Miles Davis Quintet emerged. So he left Miles eventually in 1958, and he worked in several groups, some of his own, among them with Donald Byrd and John Coltrane. And he formed his own trio. He recorded with Pepper Adams, Nat Adderley, Ray Barretto, Kenny Burrell, Eddie Lockjaw Davis, Jimmy Heath, Harold Land, Philly Joe Jones, Blue Mitchell, Ira Sullivan, among them. And he also did Red Garland record a quintet with John Coltrane and Donald Byrd. And I also did read, and I'll get to this later, that it's possible that John Coltrane and Red Garland also had some tension. However, again, going back to Red Garland setting his own ego aside, he did this for the sake of art and for creation. And in the 1970s, Red Garland's mother was aging and ill, so he returned to Texas to take care of her, and he gave up professional recording during this time. And his last recording was in 1977 named Crossings, which he did reunite with Philly Joe Jones and bassist Ron Carter. His career kind of was quieter towards the end of his life, and he continued recording until he died from a heart attack on April 23rd, 1984, at the age of 60. Okay, so that's just a little bit about Red Garland's life, an overview. And now I'm going to talk a little bit more about why I wanted to choose him. And then we'll get into looking at some of the dynamics that maybe were going on in the Miles Davis Quintet and how Red Garland was able to put his ego aside to continue to stay and make this beautiful art. So I really love Red Garland's playing. So that's why I just wanted to choose him. And he is just a part of this very historically important quintet. And as I got deeper into the life and career of him, I really began to think about the concept of being in groups and the dynamics of group therapy and how that pertained to the Miles Davis Quintet. And then I also just started to think about the experience that we all have as human beings in a group. How are we when we're in groups, and how are we different? And I also reflected on my own experience in group therapy. And I just thought applying some of the psychological dynamics to the life of Red Garland in his being in groups and what it might have been like for him as an artist and how that affected the jazz would be interesting. You know, we know that in groups are different personalities that come together, and that's where the magic can happen. And sometimes there's harmony, tension, discord, and really everything in between. And we see this in group psychotherapy, and then we also see this in musical groups. So just talking about a little bit of the psychological underpinnings of group psychotherapy, just to help us deepen our appreciation of Red Garland and his work in groups, because he did have tension with Miles Davis. And I'm going to sort of talk about that. And there's a great picture of the two of them. Red Garland is sitting at the piano and Miles Davis is kind of leaning over him. And I can't show the picture because I believe it is copyrighted material on this podcast. However, you can Google it, Red Garland, Miles Davis images. In the image, a picture is worth a thousand words. It's very striking because Miles is kind of hunched over Red Garland in a way, and Red Garland looks kind of visibly uncomfortable, as if he feels that this is kind of invasive, and you kind of get the sense that he's feeling encroached on. Like Miles is really over him. It's not like a warm embrace or like a comfortable familiarity between the two of them in this image, and this is really showing the tension. I also read that it's possible at the time that Red Garland and John Heroin were struggling with their own heroin addictions. And John Coltrane was subsequently fired by Miles from the quintet as well. So that also could have been contributing to, you know, some of the unease. Red Garland played with Miles Davis from 1955 to 1958, recording Workin' Cookin', Steamin' and Rollin'. And then he formed his own quintet, and John Coltrane joined him in some of these things later on. Okay, so I'm going to read just a little bit from the article, Developmental Characteristics of the System Forming Process, and this is by group psychotherapist Ariadne P. Beck, just to help us illuminate and understand a bit about the formation of groups and group process. And as I do this, I will apply the group content so we can get a deeper understanding of perhaps some of the group dynamics that were at play in the Miles Davis Quintet. So, number one, the environment or context within which the group and its members exist. So this includes the setting and all the factors determining an individual's entering the group, like what is going on in their life at that time. So I did read that Red and John were supposedly struggling with heroin at this time. And Miles was the leader of the group. He was the one that formed the band. And so although he was the leader, I sensed that all of the guys in the band knew that they were really good at what they did, and they all probably had strong opinions. I am curious, though, about how it was for sort of Paul Chambers and Philly Joe Jones, as they were younger, and John Coltrane and Red Garland and Miles were a little bit older. Okay, so number two, the purpose for which the group comes together, as this is elaborated into a system of goals over the lifetime of the group. So this refers to the motivations of the individual group members before they come into the group, their own personal goals. So for someone going into group therapy, like what are their personal goals? What do they want to work on? Now, when I did a year in group therapy, and I did it as part of my participation in the group psychotherapy training program at the Psychotherapy Institute in Berkeley, I really wanted to push myself to be able to open up and talk, because in groups, you know, I tended to be more reserved. So I wanted to kind of conquer my fear of groups, but just to be able to sort of show up and be authentic. Now, applying this concept to the Miles Davis Quintet, we can speculate that each of the artists, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, Philly Joe Jones, Paul Chambers, and Red Garland, they wanted to make art. That was kind of the shared purpose. They wanted to make jazz, and they wanted to become known jazz musicians. And I sensed that each of them really had an idea about how the music should be played, and that they had some creative differences, even though Miles was the convener. Okay, number three, the specific work to be done or the content aspect of the group's task. So included in this dimension, this is from Ariadne Beck, would also be the knowledge that the members possess regarding the task of the group, the resources required to accomplish the task, and their availability, as well as the degree to which the group as a whole, plus its resources, can adequately provide all the necessary components required to complete each task. So, even though the members in this quintet all had their differences, I deeply sensed that Red Garland and all of the members of the quintet wanted to make some incredible jazz. They were dedicated to making art, even though they had interpersonal differences with one another. And Red Garland was dedicated to the purpose of creating art no matter what. He set his own ego aside to be part of the team, in this case, the Miles Davis Quintet. So I'm taking it a little bit further here. This is my own addition. This is kind of the spiritual part of it. When we say dying to our own ego, this is really like putting our own desires out of the way, pushing that aside to do something that ultimately will help us grow even more. And it's hard to do this. It is hard for us to let go of our attachments as human beings to being right, having a way that we want things to go. For Red Garland, it might have been musically, the way he saw things. He and Miles had differences, and we're going to see this difference in action when we listen to our first song for today. And this is the spiritual lesson that we can take, is in a difficult situation, when we have challenges with others, can we set our own ego aside to continue on and grow? And this is really hard to do, and I struggle with this as well. I will talk about that a little bit later on. Okay, number four, the personalities and skills of the members. So this refers to the competence and sophistication of each person with respect to the goals and activities in the group, particularly as these are perceived by the other participants, and the quote readiness or quote neediness of the individual to use the group to achieve or facilitate his own personal growth and goals. So this is where I'm going to argue that kind of God's grace or kismet came in, if you will. Each member of this group, including Red, had been working at their craft as musicians, and they were really ready to make great music together because of all that had come before. Okay, number five, the qualitative aspects of group life and the methods for facilitating or hindering them in the developmental context. Included here are style of leadership, style of members in the group participation, accuracy and inclusiveness of communication, the way members feel about each other, the amount and quality of conflict generated in differentiation of roles, the way in which the work is done. Okay, so in a therapy group, for example, the depth of emotional issues that are dealt with and the adequacy of the resolution that is achieved. You know, this helps set the stage for what is to come. Now, I sense in this group, the Miles Davis Quintet, this is maybe where they struggled, which was to really work out their creative differences and still be able to feel warmly or positively towards one another. So we knew there was already tension in the group. Miles was the leader, and I imagine the tension between Miles and Red and maybe John Coltrane, you know, could have contributed to each of these members feeling ambivalent just about being in the group or just mixed feelings. However, they were dedicated to making art. And this is where putting one's own ego aside, we see and appreciate Red Garland doing this. And I'm going to show you an example of this, because this is really hard to do, just to set one's own ego aside. You know, Miles was particular in the way he wanted these recordings to go. And that would have been hard if, you know, for John Coltrane or Red Garland to have to just kind of put what they wanted to do aside and follow his lead. So one thing I wanted to just talk about was, you know, my own experience in group therapy, as I alluded to before. I really went into this program, and as part of the program I was in at the Psychotherapy Institute, we had to be in group therapy for a year with other therapists in the program. And I was, you know, historically quiet in groups before that. And, you know, I felt insecure, I think. And there was also a part of me that, like, I wanted to be almost exemplary and somebody that didn't take too much space. And I would find myself feeling resentful of another group member that did take up a lot of space. However, these are kind of flip sides of the same coin. One person who takes up too much space, and then one person who doesn't come forward enough, that was me. And so I would be sitting there kind of being resentful towards the other group member who took up a lot of space. And I had to really realize that, you know, I had judgments about how this other group member showed up, and yet I actually really wanted to be that person that could take up space. And so that's why I had the judgment about it. And I had to work through my own projections onto this other group member. And when I was able to do that, I was able to realize that I actually really did want to come forward and be seen and share. And I had to kind of put my own ego aside or my own insecurities of like, oh, you know, what will people think of if I say this or that, or just all the stuff that was just ego, and push myself to talk. And by the end of my experience in my group with my really wonderful group leader, his name was Jamie Moran. He's an LCSW in San Francisco. You guys, he's such a lovely person. If you ever are in the Bay Area in San Francisco and you need a therapist, by the end of the group, I was able to show up in so much more of an authentic, open-hearted way and just really say what I was feeling and thinking. So this is my own application of like putting my own ego aside, my own insecurities or hangups or judgments of what other people were doing, and then working through that and letting myself just to come forward and just be. And now my goal, when I am in groups, whatever type of setting, it could be professional, it could be personal, I just really want to be open-hearted and authentic and flow in harmony with the group and still and just show up. And in my daily life, I still every day have to work on putting my own ego aside in a different way. So as I already talked about, Red Garland was able to put his own ego aside, even though he had tension with Miles, because he wanted to make beautiful art. I have to do this on a daily basis. You know, I can catch myself being selfish, entitled. I grew up as an only child, so I really have a part of myself that will just kind of be like, I'll do what I want. I march to the beat of my own drum. In some ways, this is a real strength of mine because I just kind of can be in my own world and I don't mind being different than others. However, I have to catch myself daily to not be overly selfish, egoic. And it's not always something I catch. Sometimes it's not until after an interaction where I realize like, wow, I really messed up there. I was just really not considering someone else's point of view. And I want to say this, you guys, because this show, I'm doing it for myself, for the beauty of the jazz that we can hear. And I hope that you can get something out of it too, in terms of just helping yourself reflect on, you know, how you show up in groups. In this case, where is it that you need to put your own ego aside in your daily life and in your relationships? Because this is something I still have to work on. So maybe leave me a comment. If you guys leave a comment, just let me know, like, what are you working on in terms of compassionately working with yourself to put your own ego aside to continue your growth? All right. Now let's get to the jazz, because this is the fun part.
Now it's time to listen to some jazz. Due to copyright laws, we cannot play the music on air at this time. I respect copyright laws and the incredible artists who created the jazz we listen to, as without them, we would have no jazz. I will leave links to the songs we listen to so you can pause and listen to the songs along with us. It is my dream to someday grow this podcast to the point where I can eventually host it on a major streaming platform which owns the right to play music, so we can all have the communal experience of listening together. Until then, please bear with me.
So the first piece of music that we are going to listen to is from the album Relaxin' with the Miles Davis Quintet. Now, this is an album, this is from Wikipedia, recorded by the quintet in 1956. It was recorded May 11th and October 26th, 1956. And this was at the Van Gelder Studios in Hackensack, New Jersey. And Rudy Van Gelder was a very famous sound engineer. And anytime you see his name on an album, you can be guaranteed that the sound quality is absolutely paramount. It is excellent. So they came together and they recorded a bunch of music. And then later the record label packaged them as Workin', Cookin', Steamin', Rollin'. And we're going to hear a track from Relaxin' with the Miles Davis Quintet. Now we're at the intro of this song. You're going to hear Miles give a little intro, kind of tell everybody to be quiet when the red light goes on. And then Red Garland starts playing. And then Miles Davis whistles and tells him to stop. And then he says, play block chords, Red, play it again, because he does not like the opening. And so this is just kind of indicative of the tension between the two of them. Now, Red Garland obliges. He does this. And I found a really interesting article. And this is from the newsletter, The Gig, by the writer and critic, Nate Shinnin. And his article is entitled, Mr. Inside, Red Garland at 100. And this was from a May 10th, 2023 post. And so he has a quote about the beginning of the song we're going to hear, You're My Everything. And this is what he says of the interaction between Miles and Red Garland when Miles tells him, play block chords. Quote, Garland obliges with what I can only describe as passive-aggressive poetry. His articulation of those block chords, setting up the songbook standard, You're My Everything, somehow conveys both gilded elegance and grudging insolence. The opening measure sounds, would sarcastic be a stretch? I can't help myself. It does. And yet Davis got precisely what he wanted. Garland's four-bar intro lands gracefully, and Miles delivers a gorgeous reading of the melody, his close-miked harmon mute accentuating every nuance of breath and phrasing. Okay, so listen to that. This is his take on it. Pay attention and see, what do you hear as Miles gives him this correction and then Red Garland takes it in? So again, this is where Red Garland, he puts his own ego aside and he does what Miles wants and he does create beautiful art. And you guys, this is really hard to do. So this just makes me love him even more. So now I want you to, as you're listening along, pause and you can go to our link list to listen to You're My Everything. And then we're going to talk about it after we're done. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. It is so amazing to think that even though there was tension amongst Red Garland and Miles, that Red could just really surrender that and let the beauty of the music flow through him. And this is a piece, I just think about how good it feels to be loved when I hear this song. Just that feeling of feeling deeply at home with somebody. You know, we all need that. Be it from a partner, from a friend, you know, from our children. It's that feeling that we're home and that we're safe. And just the deep appreciation for that. I would put this song in the category of emotional tone setting, emotional reverie. And as you listen to it, what comes up for you? Just notice if you feel moved like I did, or if you have other thoughts or memories or reflections, just be with those and think about what comes up. So this was Relaxin' with the Miles Davis Quintet. Now for our next song, we're going to do three today. We're going to go to a song that is a jazz album by the Red Garland Quintet. And this was recorded in 1957 and 1958. So this was recorded on Prestige, a different record label than Miles was recording on. And no, actually, this was the same. This was also Prestige. So Red Garland had formed his own quintet, and it was also recorded at Van Gelder Studios. And so Red Garland's on the piano, John Coltrane's on the tenor saxophone, Donald Byrd on the trumpet, Paul Chambers on bass, Art Taylor is on the drums. And Jamil Nasser actually, it's the basis on this track we're going to hear, called Billy's Bounce. I also did read that it's possible John Coltrane and Red Garland had some tension between the two of them as well. I found this quote on, I believe it is Reddit, and a poster named Teasing the Korean on July 17th, 2018 wrote, quote, "A name-dropping former music professor of mine indicated that John Coltrane didn't like Red Garland's piano playing, that, quote, only those very few of us who were close to the group knew this." That's interesting because John Coltrane did go on to record with Red Garland even after the Miles Davis Quintet. So again, whether this is true or not, if it was true, again, it speaks to Red Garland being able to work with John Coltrane, even if they did have differences, putting his ego aside to make great music. You know, both of them, it sounds like from what I read, could have been struggling with their own heroin addictions at the time, which was in the mix and maybe just made things difficult. However, again, we see that the artistry comes first. So the song we're going to hear from this album is called Billy's Bounce. It's a Charlie Parker tune. It's long. So if you're listening along with us, pause right now and go listen to Billy's Bounce, and then we will talk about it when we are done. Well, Mr. Persip was right at the beginning of this podcast when I quoted him that Red Garland really could swing. That was so jubilant and joyful. I felt like I wanted to do cartwheels. There's just such a wonderful playfulness in this song. The joy of being alive, the feeling of being a child and having that freedom in summer. I think that's what comes to mind. He really could swing. Red Garland on Billy's Bounce. He has an amazing solo in the middle of this. And John Coltrane here too. So even if the two of them did have differences, again, Red Garland is showing us, set that aside and look at the joy and the beauty that could still come. And I really need to take this lesson to heart myself. I would put this song in the category of emotional galvanization because it makes me want to just get up and dance and be joyful and free and just blast this song while I'm driving. And emotional elevation because I feel better just hearing it. I feel more joyful. So as you reflect on this song, just notice what thoughts, feelings, and emotions come up and what category of emotional listening you would put it into. All right. So for our final song today, before we move to our meditation, we are going to hear the song Stormy Weather from Red Garland's 1959 album, All Kinds of Weather. And this is such a clever way of packaging this album because all of the songs on this album have to do with the weather, stormy weather, spring will be a little late this year, summertime, rain, very clever. And on this album, again, it's RVG, Rudy Van Gelder. And I'm curious too about Red Garland and Rudy Van Gelder. Gosh, I would have loved to have met Rudy Van Gelder, my kingdom, to have known him because he knew all of the great jazz artists. And I sense that Red Garland and Rudy Van Gelder were simpatico, that they got along. So this is a trio. It's just Red Garland on piano, Paul Chambers on bass from the original Miles Davis Quintet, and Art Taylor on drums, the song Stormy Weather. So stop right here if you're listening with us and listen to this song, and we will be back after to talk about it. Well, we just heard Stormy Weather by the Red Garland Trio featuring Paul Chambers and Art Taylor. Absolutely sublime. A beautiful example of Red Garland's block chord playing. And this song is so soothing and so lovely. It's almost as if he's saying in this song, because it's not a version of Stormy Weather that is full of deep anguish, like if we might hear the Billie Holiday version. It's almost like he's singing from heaven and maybe his soulmate or beloved is still on earth. And he's saying, I miss you, I long for you, and yet I know I have this deep sense that we will be together again. It's like also rooted in a deep feeling of just gratitude to have that kind of a deep love. I don't know if you guys ever feel that. I'm sure you do. Just when you love someone so intensely and so all-encompassing that sometimes you just overflow with gratitude to even feel a love like that. It's like that's the kind of stormy weather he's singing. Like we're not together right now. And it's not necessarily a lover, just someone you love so deeply. You're not with them, but yet there's just joy and gratitude to even have a love that deep. Absolutely gorgeous. And I really especially want to notice Paul Chambers. His work on the bass was just absolutely incredible. And he was very young, like 22 or 23. So wonderful. I would put this in the category of emotional transcendence and emotional reverie. And if you have time, check out this album, All Kinds of Weather, Red Garland, released April 1959. All right. Well, before we wrap up this podcast, I would like us to do a little guided metta meditation where we send positive and healing energy to some specific groups. And I was thinking about groups and I just felt it on my heart to do a meditation for Congress in the United States, consisting of the House of Representatives and the Senate, all 535 members. And then we'll also include all of the legislative bodies, such as parliaments and governments around the world. And I was thinking about Congress and parliaments because, you know, we all know they tend to be a bit dysfunctional. There are challenges, especially in the United States. Congress has some big issues. And I imagine that even a representative, a senator who is elected with the most pure, heartfelt intentions to serve the people and do good, finds themselves faced against having to make compromises that they never even imagined. Imagine there's so much temptation in terms of special interests, money, that everybody does have to make some kind of a compromise. And then there are folks in Congress who perhaps are there for their ego. These folks make decisions that affect millions of people, hundreds of millions of people, especially in the United States. The decisions that these legislators make affect the entire globe. They decide about funding for wars, such as between Russia and Ukraine, even sending military aid and funds to the war between Israel and Gaza. Right now, there really is a genocide that is going on. So I'm just saying it's a huge responsibility. And so whoever, regardless of if we like the legislators there or if we disapprove of their work, they're still there. And so bidden or unbidden, they need our prayers that they can serve humanity to their highest capacity. So that's why this was on my heart, just thinking about groups. We'll just do this short little metta meditation. So just close your eyes. And take a couple of deep breaths with me. And I want you to just focus on your heart center area, the heart chakra area. The heart chakra is green. And I want you just to imagine that radiating from your heart chakra is this spinning ball of golden light. And I want you to see this golden light just radiate out all over to your shoulders, arms, head, legs, knees, ankles, feet. Just imagine your whole entire body is just covered and filled with this golden light. You might say, may I be peaceful, happy, and free. And may I die to my own ego to be more loving in every moment. And now I want you to imagine that this golden light that has filled your whole body, starting from your heart center, that wherever you are, you're going to send this golden light to the United States House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., to all 435 members. Just imagine the Capitol building, the chambers of the House of Representatives, and also the chambers of the United States Senate, to all 100 senators. And we'll also include Vice President Kamala Harris, who has the tie-breaking vote. We'll send her some of this golden light. And just imagine it. And if it's hard to imagine, just pretend you're imagining it. I heard someone say that once, and that was helpful. Just get this visual. So from wherever you are, this light going all the way to the United States Congress and the Senate and Vice President Kamala Harris. May all of these elected officials serve humanity to their highest capacity. May they act and vote with integrity and wisdom. May they put their egos aside to make hard choices when they need to make them. May they have the courage to stand up and stand firm when they need to. And may they also be able to flow with the Tao of life and flow in harmony to be able to work with one another. May all of these legislators and Vice President Harris be peaceful, happy, free, and make good decisions for all. And now I want you to imagine just coming back to your heart center again. And I want you to imagine from this golden center area around your heart chakra, we're going to send this golden energy and we're going to cover the entire globe with a special mention to parliaments and legislative bodies in every country in the world. May everyone who is a public servant, a legislator in a government in every country be blessed with wisdom, courage, steadfastness, and an attitude of service to make the best decisions they can. May all legislators work in harmony with one another as much as possible. May they die to their own ego to serve humanity to their highest capacity. Just imagine this golden light from your heart covering the entire globe with a special mention to all of these legislators, members of parliament. May they be peaceful, happy, free, and content, and serve as best they can. And now just come back to your own heart center. We'll just take a couple final breaths. It's filled with this golden light rooted in our heart chakras of a beautiful emerald green. And when you're ready, go ahead and open your eyes. Thank you for doing this meditation with me. Before we depart, I'm just going to read a few more quotes, since I really love quotes, just to tie everything together. As you dissolve into love, your ego fades. You're not thinking about loving. You're just being love, radiating like the sun. Ram Dass. He's one of my favorite spiritual teachers. Here's another. Your ego can become an obstacle to your work. If you start believing in your greatness, it is the death of your creativity. When ego is lost, limit is lost. You become infinite, kind, beautiful. Harbhajan Singh Yogi. And finally, the ego is the single biggest obstruction to the achievement of anything. So just wrapping up, we really did a deep dive today into the life of Red Garland and the Miles Davis Quintet. And the life lesson that we took from today was that Red Garland, even though he had challenges working with Miles Davis, really was able to set his ego aside to make beautiful music, to make art. And 60 something years later, almost 70 years later, his legacy endures. And today, I hope your soul was nourished by the beauty of the jazz you heard and by the content of what you heard here today. And may we continue on in our path to be more loving and just die to our own egos, whether it's to work on obstacles like I was talking about, my entitlement or being selfish, or sometimes even pushing aside our insecurity to let ourselves just come forward and shine. Thank you so much for being here with me. Check back next week. May jazz therapy soothe your soul.
Thank you for listening, reflecting, and being present with us today. Please leave us a review and comment as we love feedback and aim to continuously improve and innovate, embodying the spirit of jazz itself. Jazz Therapy is edited and produced by Patricio Garcia. Sage Salmon is our social media coordinator. To connect with us, find us on Instagram and TikTok. Our email is info@jazztherapy.com. Check back next week for our next episode. May jazz therapy soothe your soul.